Date right away.
Here we got board time on 29 January, Wednesday.
That must be this stuff here.
I guess I should ask the chair if he's ready.
I think it's Leanna.
Where you been?
Lunch.
Late lunch.
Food, gotta have it.
Exactly.
Okay, to get Mike Burgess on the phone?
Yes.
I come back from lunch, I walk into the room, and have a few seats left. I just come back down 199, I've got my new glasses. And
nice. And those are the frames and everything, too?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they're nice. I like
yeah.
them. Cool.
Frame was on the bottom.
Yeah, I like that. That's yeah. cool.
Hey, Mike, it's Axel.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
And
yep. I think you got me.
I've got you. You are in board time on the record with the commissioners, and I won't name everybody. There's a number of staff here in the Columbian and some citizens.
They never got bright enough.
So
I think that's what they are. I know it's anti-glare.
Just hold on.
When I'm trying to.
Got a sidebar going.
The commissioners are talking. So we're
talking about, no, talking about glasses.
Oh, how you doing, Mike?
Mike.
Hello, commissioners. How are you?
I'm good. We have a whole house full here.
Okay.
So you've got an agenda to go
So through. What I did, yeah. So, Mike, what I did is I made copies and printed up your agenda as well as the supporting materials from the links. So the board all has that. So if you just want to use that and go through, and we'll just kind of start talking about these things individually.
Okay. So I will just kind of start talking and then interrupt me if you need to.
We have a habit of that anyway.
Okay. Just a quick introduction of where we're at in session. Today is the date of the 29th, and it is the 17th legislative day of 60. So we're past the quarter poll, quickly approaching, I guess, the one-third poll. The next important date that matters here is the policy committee cutoff, which is February 7th. So that's next month. A week and a half, I guess, from now, next Friday. And so that's where a number of the bills that we're working on will need to have advanced from their committee, and ultimately then the next cutoff after that for bills to be out of their House of Origin. So House goes out of the House, Senate goes out of the Senate, is the 18th of February. So those are going to be two important dates coming between now and then. Switching to the agenda items in front of you there, I kind of split up into two. I've got the agenda items that were on our agenda, and then some other topics, things that have been popping up that I wanted to discuss with you and get positions from you, and I guess directions from the three of you as to how you want me to proceed. So the Clark County agenda items that are the first four, those were, again, things that we were directed to support. I just want to give you a heads up on where those are. We had a hearing on the Conservation Futures Levy Flexibility Bill, I guess is what I'm calling it, last week. Last Thursday, had a successful hearing. Senator Benton spoke in favor of his bill. And then, as you know, one of my other clients is Spokane County. They also supported the bill, and then Commissioner O'Quinn over to testify in favor of it, along with some parks folks. And then both your staff, Patrick Lee and Ron Wieringa, came up and did a great job. We've had to make a few changes to the bill in terms of, you may recall that bill would allow for up to 25% for M&O with a certain amount of, with a certain threshold to meet that. I think it was 100 acres. Then you could go all the way up to 35% if you had over 400 acres and had the program in existence for, I want to say, over 20 years. We've had to make a few changes. There was some opposition to the bill with some of the conservation groups. We're going to be able to keep the 25% in place that you can use for M&O, but we switched the acreage number up to 1,000. And as I understand it, Clark County is at over 4,000 anyway, so you will meet that threshold. And then the 35% number drops down to 30. With a couple other caveats that you have to be at your maximum levy rate, which I believe Clark County is.
We are.
And then the acreage was 7,000 in, or excuse me, the acreage level for the, to get to the 30% is 4,000 acres, and you're over 7,000, or excuse me, you're just over 4,000 anyway. So, you'll be able to take full advantage of the bill still. I guess the net effect for you all is that the 35% threshold is going to drop down to 30. But that was part of the compromise.
That's still double what we have now. So,
That's still double what we have now.
Absolutely, Commissioner, you are correct.
That's great.
So, mm-hmm. Just wanted to give you an update that that bill, and I anticipate that bill will be voted out of committee.
That's great.
Maybe this or tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, I believe, is when the committee meets next. And it should be voted out of committee, and it may end up going to Ways and Means because of the potential, even though it's a local government budget impact, sometimes Ways and Means will grab those anyway, so we'll have to see where that goes.
Hope not.
But that bill's well positioned. We're doing what we need to be doing on that.
Hey, Mike, quickly on that bill, you said that the compromise, you talk about the compromise. Does the compromise involve the environmental community so that when it gets across, it's not going to get stuck?
It will be in favor. Well, the two groups that testified against it will now be in favor of the bill.
Perfect. Great work, man.
Yeah, good work. Sounds like it makes it more sustainable.
And, you know, Senator Benton deserves credit, too. He convened the meeting, but we've done a good job of shepherding it. So this far, we're not done, but we'll keep going.
Good.
On the two stormwater flexibility bills, those, all I can say is they've been introduced. They have not been scheduled for a hearing yet, but we were told that they will show up on a hearing schedule for next week. We'll see what that schedule is tonight. If they do get their hearing, like I think they will, I'll talk to, I think Ron would come back up and testify on that one, or however, whatever needs to happen, we'll coordinate that. But those bills still need a hearing. On the industrial land bank bill, you'll remember this is the extension of the expiration date or the sunset, I guess. That bill, because it passed the House last year, it passed out of the committee, it retained its highest position, which happens in a short session. If a bill was passed in the long session, but if a bill makes it out of the committee but did not pass the entire body, it goes to its highest order. And since we did that and it made it onto the House floor tonight, that's where that bill sits right now. It does not need a public hearing because it had it last session. So I'm working with the members of our delegation. They're in key spots to make sure that that bill does in fact get voted off the floor. And again, that will not need to happen until February 17th. So very likely that bill won't see anything happen to that bill for another week or two until they get into the more definitive floor action in a week or two. And then the last one, the Economic Development Tax Credit Bill, this is Axel's favorite. We're having trouble with that one. Bluntly put, as we know, you'll remember when we had our roundtable discussion with legislators, specifically the House Finance Chairman is very difficult on this issue and on tax breaks in general. I don't know if it's right to characterize this as a tax break, but it is a general fund hit. So he's very adverse to those, so we have a difficulty there, and I am efforting still to try to get us a hearing in the Senate Ways and Means Committee. It does have an extra few days because of the fiscal bill in terms of the policy committee cutoff day, but all I can tell you is we're just pushing to still get a hearing, and we'll see how that goes. It is important to note that there's discussion in the Senate that there may not even be a supplemental budget, and that would impact something like this because it would have a budget impact. I think that's kind of more of a discussion right now from the committee chair and some posturing about whether or not there'll be a supplemental budget, but this all fits into the budget debate.
Yeah, you know, Mike, if we could just get a hearing, I don't expect it to pass maybe any time in the near future, but I want to just try to keep getting it heard so we can continue to get on the record with what the Portland metro area does to our revenue situation and, you know, and what financially that money could mean to us for economic development. So I just don't think a lot of people around the state understand, you know, the revenue problem we have because of our geography. So if we can just get another opportunity to voice that and make more people aware of it, I think we'll be doing good.
Hey, Mike. I'll keep pushing. Yes, Commissioner.
I want to make sure you had an answer. Time to respond to Axel.
I will keep pushing. Pulling at the strings that I can to see if we can't get a committee hearing scheduled.
My question is, are our own state legislative representatives and senators getting behind this bill? Is there any kind of a coalition that kind of represents Clark County better up there? Do you know where they all stand? Are they united on this support?
Yes, Commissioner. They all signed the bill last year, and they are the ones I'm working with to talk to the committee chairs from a colleague to colleague standpoint. And so feel good about the people asking, I guess.
Great.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so we have unanimous support for our representatives and senators from this, from the Clark County.
I don't think there's a member of your delegation that would oppose this bill.
Great, thank you.
So that takes care of kind of our priorities, and can I move on to some of these other topics?
Yeah, there was that one thing with Treasurer Lasher. I kind of made a really bad first cut of a letter, but you and I spoke about those bills. Mike, do you see any issue? I don't see any issue with us giving him a letter of support.
I'm aware of the bills. I mean, obviously, I think the commissioners need to decide that they are in support of them as well.
Okay, and so I just handed out some information, but basically, these are three House bills that have companion Senate bills. The first one basically, I think, just streamlines and makes it easier. I thought this was the electronic one.
It is.
For electronic payments. Electronic online auctions was the first one, which we've talked a lot about in the past. And then the second one is the one that would allow electronic payments online, which we've talked about a lot in the past. And the third one just allows some flexibility for the treasurer to give people a break when they have a serious situation come up and they get behind on their property taxes, like a death or a terminal illness. So it basically just gives them a little bit more authority to waive fees and interest. So I didn't see any issue with these.
Interest and penalty, I think.
Yeah, interest and penalty.
Not the actual tax.
That's right. So again, yeah, I didn't see a big issue with these, and I told the treasurer we would work towards getting the board to approve supporting them.
Yep.
If you guys are okay, we'll get
sure.
them a letter, and
mm-hmm.
and I guess that's your direction, Mike, that you can support those as well. Still there?
Mike? We lose you?
Sounds like he's gone.
Yeah, I don't hear anything.
Oh, I think
can you hear me now?
It says mute on there. Did you press your volume?
I pushed nothing.
Maybe he muted it.
It's up here.
Yeah, mute's up here.
Yeah, maybe not.
Mike?
No, it's off.
Are you there? Well, let's try calling him back.
Yep.
Hello, Earth?
Yeah, there's Earth.
Have to repeat all that treasurer stuff, you think?
No,
just tell him. You know, just tell him to support the bill.
That was the last thing you heard. New people here today. We don't have a regular.
You've reached my purchase. Please listen.
Red and his wife.
We'll try one more time, and then we can move on to something else.
Did you break the leg later?
No, it's just not on here, so I was curious.
Yeah, no, I forgot to put it on there.
Ooh, that's
my deal.
We're flexible.
Yeah, it's fine.
You're bad.
Hey, we lost you there. So just quickly, the board gave you direction. You're good to go on supporting the treasurer's bills, and we'll get him a letter.
Share that letter with me, too, so I have a specific brief.
Okay. And that basically takes us into the other topics, the child abuse investigations bill.
Okay, is Mary there?
She is.
Okay. I guess I'll punt this off to you, Mary, if that's okay, putting you on the spot a little bit. So the board knows Senator Cleveland called me a couple weeks ago. He told me she would be introducing this piece of legislation that Mary's going to talk about and wanted to get it in front of you all for your opinion.
Okay, great. So this has been ongoing since I got here and took the position. They didn't have an identified child abuse evaluator, medical evaluator in all of Clark County at that time. And that's kind of unheard of in a region of our size. So I know firsthand what it's like not to have a designated medical provider who is able to take or willing to take these cases. In part, they need specialized knowledge because you have, for physical abuse cases, you often have a bruise and a story, and you don't know that unless you have that specialized training. And Dr. Kim Copeland from Legacy Salmon Creek Hospital is our designated expert in this region, has gone to specialized training, and she's reviewing the physical abuse cases and doing the physical abuse cases with little to no compensation. And they are struggling as a clinic to stay alive. In many communities in the state of Washington, they don't have a Dr. Copeland. Children who have are suspected to be sexually abused screen in, and they have full compensation from the beginning from crime victims compensation, but children have maybe a suspicious injury that might be criminally related, like a brain bleed or, you know, and they got a story, need the same thing. And they do not have that kind of compensation. So when she gets those cases afterwards, she's seeing that, yeah, maybe they had a bruise and a story, but then somebody should have known and given them a skeletal, exam, x-ray, where you can see there's other injuries. And in one case, she had a liver laceration of an infant, and it wasn't picked up. And so she knows firsthand and will testify. So in part, I'm not the expert to talk about this, but it originated from our knowledge of how difficult this is, how fortunate we are, but how much every clinic in the state of Washington is struggling to keep this going. In Oregon, a child who was under 5, I don't remember exactly how old she was, but she actually died of physical abuse. And when they tracked it back, she had a series of reported injuries that she never got screened in with a medical evaluator who knew what they were doing, and indeed she died. They have a law they put through called Carley's Law, and this was brought to Senators Cleveland, actually I think she proposed it, but there were other legislators interested in this, and I got a call from an attorney who was the state of Washington legislation attorney, but bipartisan. She wasn't part of any party. And I pointed her to the direction of Carley's Law. And so this particular write-up is really kind of mirroring that law, and the success of that can be also brought to the attention of the state legislature by the medical providers in that state that saw a marked difference in saving children from permanent disability or even fatality by having this law in place. So we would like that in Washington. It originated from conversations that are board level. I worked with Dr. Sugar, who is no longer with us, but from Harborview. I don't know if any of you know her, but she was a resident state expert for years, plus the manager of Legacy Salmon Creek. We put forth a proposal, and this has really come from Clark County's region, so it's kind of a wonderful thing, and we're hoping that.
Bill.
Okay.
With big, it's got going to have a physical impact on it, Mike. So,
you're correct, Commissioner Milky. It will have a fiscal impact. I don't know how much statewide. I have to imagine it's into the millions of dollars. So that's something to be aware of. That will make it difficult to pass, but I think it's obviously, from my point of view, it's a worthy discussion to have.
There's little or no funding at all today, so I don't think it'd be that much. That large of a physical impact, but I guess the point is, I guess staff up there could probably figure that out.
But well, I think what likely happen too is if it starts moving through and it's going to get a hearing, we for Clark County will be asked to help contribute to a fiscal note on it. So they're going to consult as to what your costs are now, I guess, and we'll have some input on that.
Yeah, it'd be a statewide effect, obviously, and need.
But,
so.
Right, and then given how big, obviously, King County is and the implications there, so it will drive up a fiscal note for sure.
Okay.
Okay, so the board's generally supportive of that piece.
Yes, yeah.
So, Mike, you've got some direction on that one, and then also, Mary, if you have any language for a letter or anything like that you want to get or work with me on, I can work with the board on it.
And, Mike, Senator Cleveland talked with me about this bill last week when I was up for WASAC. So would you please wrap back around with her and let her know the board's talked to, please?
I will do that.
Thank you. She's the prime.
Great.
You get the number.
All right, that takes us to besting.
He does.
Mike?
Yeah. Mike does.
Is Marty there?
Marty is here. And
the number.
It's different.
Yes. I want to make sure he...
Oh. Mike, you have the number for the... CJC, you know, for the
child
the
abuse.
Bill we just the child abuse bill we just talked about, right?
Yeah, 64.
Yes, 6470.
All right,
yeah.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Mary.
Mike, you want me to give a bit of an overview and then?
Well, Mary. Let me first say that these two bills that Marty's going to describe were heard this morning in the House Local Government Committee. Your Association of Counties signed in opposed to these bills, and the general kind of business and developer communities are opposed to these bills. And I think once Marty explains, you'll understand why.
Before you get into the explanation, just as to does this have legs? Like when I was lobbying for what is now FutureWise, they threw a vesting bill at me to close this loophole every year I was there, but it was basically the bill that you knew would die. It's just something that they made me do. So is it after this many years of them banging their heads against the wall to try to close the loophole, is the Spokane example finally pushing this to where it actually has legs, or is it dead in the water already?
Well, Commissioner, I think it's still going to be very difficult for this bill to pass, but I put it before you today because we have a few members on the committee, or one in particular on the committee that's a Clark County legislator. I thought it'd be appropriate for us to have an official position.
Cool. All right. Thanks. Sorry for interrupting. Go ahead.
So the first bill number is 2245.
I put them on their backwards order.
Okay. I read 2245 and it made more sense to me than 2234. So 2245 addresses the vesting of an application issue, and this bill would say that an application would not vest until after your comprehensive plan is adopted, either the later of three dates, 60 days from the date of publication of your comp plan amendment, which is the appeal period that runs to the hearings board. If there's no appeal, then your application is vested. If there's an appeal and you go to the hearings board and there's a finding of noncompliance, your application is not vested. Then a county would consider what we need to do on an order of noncompliance.
Invalidity or
noncompliance? Because the invalidity is the other bill.
Okay.
That it's only after the hearings board says, yes, your amendment's in compliance, then that application would become vested. So that's 2245, 2234.
Well, and before you, so 2245, the difference between noncompliance and invalidity. Noncompliance says you have an element of your plan or your amendment that we don't like. We think was not correct. But it doesn't invalidate the rest of the plan. So, for example, we have a comp plan and they say, we don't like what you did with ag. But they say, okay, they issue an order of noncompliance on the agricultural element of the comp plan. Everything else is then still left intact, right, Marty?
Yes.
So everything else is left intact. So what it would say is you can't even vest to any of the compliant pieces of this, and which is, it's ridiculous. There's
it holds
no way
up
that,
the show. The
yeah,
whole show.
It holds up the whole show for a small issue. Now we get into invalidity, which is, invalidity just says, here, start over. It says we don't
on the whole plan.
On the whole plan. It says startup. So that one's a bigger issue, and we got an order of invalidity on our on. What did we get an order of invalidity for? It was after the MOU with the.
The Cowlitz.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
So the second bill is more on point with the invalidity because it strikes a few provisions in a different section of the GMA statute, and the curious language is that the permit. Would not be vested, and it would be determined void and confers no vested rights. So I was talking to Chris Cook about this bill, and the arguments that we made in the Court of Appeals, and we lost, this basically enshrines the Court of Appeals decision.
Yeah.
And the idea that you'd void a permit, an example would be the county expands an urban growth boundary in a community. The community entertains a development agreement, and then there's this action. That development agreement just becomes a vapor.
Right.
It becomes void. It's almost like you're getting into almost contract law. So these are bills that are not favorable, and it leaves anybody who wants to do anything just up in the air until all appeals are settled at the hearings court level.
So predictability and risk.
Exactly.
This moves all in the wrong direction.
That is the nature of the vesting debate. Is exactly right.
And we have a local legislator that's
on the committee.
Just on the committee.
That's going the wrong direction on this.
I can guarantee. No, I mean not yet. Mike, are there?
Mayor, Commissioner, there's Representative Pike is on the committee. And that's why I wanted to make sure we had a clear position that I could articulate.
Okay, she's a friend.
Yeah. Well, and we don't have, none of the sponsors of the bill are from Clark County, and I'm looking at the names. Are these all, other than Fitzgibbon, are these coming from Spokane?
So the Fitzgibbon bill is that there's a varied sponsorship from different folks around the state. The other bill, sponsored by Representative Orr, is in direct response to something Spokane County did this summer with an expansion.
Yeah.
Commissioner,
so
you can blame your nephew for that.
I don't know anybody over there.
All right, Mike, so we're not supporting those, and that's the direction there.
I think Commissioner Stewart's point was well taken. These bills have significant difficulty to pass. But again, I thought we should have a position just in case.
Well, and if I had to lay odds, I mean, the non-compliance one is dead in the water just because of the nature of the redress is so much greater than the nature of the potential harm. The invalidity one I'd watch a little closer, just because the invalidity piece of it, you can make a better argument. The other side can make a better argument for invalidity being a reason to void these because you make the argument that I expand the boundaries. I include some area. The board comes back, the hearings board and all these guys come back and say, that's invalid. Your whole plan is invalid. That means that entire area of land that I brought in, they said, it's invalid, so it should remain rural. But if somebody already came in and applied under that plan, then they would be vested in urban rights in what will become a rural area or what will stay a rural area. So there's an argument to be made, which means that you just have to watch it more closely.
Okay. So there's really two degrees. One is we don't support, but there's a better degree, which is we oppose.
I think that's what we actively oppose. Yeah.
I will be with the voice, now your opposition.
Okay.
Thanks.
If I can move on to the next bill?
Yep.
This is the eminent domain legislation. Commissioners Medora and Mackey, you sent a letter to the legislature for some support for that bill. Just put it on here to give you an update. That the bill is scheduled to receive executive action, so it'll be voted from committee. To bring it up here in front of me so I have the date correct. It's hearing, but I am confident that it will move out of committee. That date hasn't been set for a committee vote, but I do think it will move.
I
don't have a stopper other than just an update.
I heard there's a lot of support for it.
I think there will be on the committee. Commissioner, I don't know beyond that how much.
Yeah, well,
that's only because I haven't vote counted or done that, so.
Yeah, okay.
Commissioner Stewart, wait, before you go, Commissioner Stewart just stepped out. Is he not on board on this? Or does he know about it?
I don't believe he signed your letter.
Let's see again.
I don't believe he signed the letter, Commissioner Medora.
No, he didn't. The letter came from Commissioner Medora and Milkey. I haven't put him on the spot or asked him specifically about it. He wasn't here when it went up. So we could ask him, but I did watch the hearing. I saw Senator Benton obviously testified, and then Jeff Hamm testified against the bill, and I think there was just one or two other people signed in. There wasn't a lot of testimony.
This is C-TRAN, sorry, Matt.
Lots of senators.
Yeah.
So we'll come back to Senator Commissioner Stewart on this one.
Why don't we talk about I-502 a little bit, Mike, and the bills that are going on to bring the medical, basically bring the medical side, the Medical Cannabis Act, into line with I-502.
Right, and so Axel said that correct. There's a big discussion about 502 and how that all gets implemented. And the discussion ranges from reactions to the Attorney General's position that you all have special control over, I guess, whether or not to ban the businesses or not. So there are bills that have come to react to that, to take away your ability to ban by some, to reinforce your ability to ban by others. There are numerous bills dealing with what to do with the revenue. Some of those range from a guarantee of revenue going to local government to all the way to there's at least one bill that would not let you have any revenue if you have a ban in place. And so there are just different variations on that. And then Axel mentioned the desire or the legislation to, bring in line the medical community with the commercial community. I don't know a better way to describe it. Axel's clearly very familiar with this issue, so maybe you can clean it up if I misstated it.
Yeah, and it would be my opinion, and obviously the board can give you direction, but I think WASAC is supporting. I'm not positive, but it's my hope that they're supporting, and we should also support bringing the Medical Cannabis Act in line with I-502, because having the two very different legislative schemes has led to a very dysfunctional situation.
Right. And actually, last year this board took a position in favor of supporting Senator Rivers' bill.
Yeah, it was like 5887 or something.
And that bill has been voted from committee. It's active again. And if we need to readdress that specific bill, maybe we should. But nothing has changed with it.
Yeah, no.
Some circumstance there has changed that we wouldn't support the bill now.
No, I think, unless the board says otherwise, we're good just sticking the course on that one. I think the more cloudy one is what to do with these state shared revenues and sort of some of the stick versus the carrot bill.
Today I'm not asking for a position from the commissioners. I just wanted to make you aware that this discussion is going on and we may revisit this issue. I do think it's important to note that anything that amends 502 is going to be difficult to pass this year because it will require a two-thirds vote, because we're within the first 2 years after the initiative passed. Next year it will be just a simple majority. There's also folks that in the legislature, and some of them are in key leadership positions, that have said that we're not inclined to give a chop of the revenue to local government until we know what kind of revenue we're talking about. Because there's been no revenue generated by sales or the taxation of transactions under 502 because it hasn't started yet.
Well, that's frustrating because they were inclined to give percentages of the revenue regardless of what that number amount was to lots of different other things. So
and this is also a little caught up in the broader budget discussion about just where they're going to spend revenue. Are they going to put more money into education to respond to the Supreme Court's kind of restatement, I guess, of the McCleary case, which is the education case. So there's posturing right now what to do with revenue, but there's a big desire to compete for the revenue associated with Initiative 502. And again, I don't want direction today. I just want you all to be aware that we may have a discussion about this and need to have kind of a quicker turnaround on it if something breaks loose here in the coming weeks. But again, just want to get on your radar screen.
Well, maybe, Mike, we should set up, because I think there are bills up there right now that maybe we should be not supporting. I mean, there's some bills that are talking about taking away our local flexibility to ban or not, and there's also bills talking about either giving us or not giving us funding. So maybe, maybe we can tee it up.
And there was also a pretty robust discussion on this issue at WASAC last week that I was not in the room for. I don't know if Commissioner Stewart came back in and if he was in there or not.
Yep.
Either.
Yeah, I was, and there's
anything to offer there, Commissioner Stewart.
The bills regarding the flexibility, there's consistency around the table at WASAC with regards to maintaining flexibility. And I think every one of the county commissioners that was around there said, look, whether we're going to use it or not, we still want to be able to have the flexibility and not have it not be preempted from local decision making, especially after getting A.G. Ferguson's opinion. So that was the flexibility side. On the funding side of it, all the conversation was about getting a significant share of the basic health plan funds that are no longer applicable under 502, since the basic health plan no longer exists. And there's a significant portion of funds under Initiative 502 that were going to go to the basic health plan, which no longer exists under the Affordable Care Act. And so thus, there's money available. But like they were saying, the state sees that, they drool over it and say, well, that'd be great for the general fund. There are other jurisdictions that are talking about, well, you know, let's make it tied to like a sales tax. And so that they would tie it to how much of the operations that they had. The only pushback that I made on that was that it should act like a sales tax then, because even if we ban it, we still have regional costs associated with jails, courts, mental health and community services where we do regional service provision that we would not be getting revenue to help with this. And so with the sales tax, we get 15% of the revenue generated in the cities, and if you're going to treat this as a sales tax, you should do something like that, so that if a city gets revenue out of that pot of money, that we get 15% of it for the regional services that are required. And there seemed to be pretty good support, but there's no bill that reflects it yet.
And then everything takes two-thirds of a vote, which is not likely this year.
Two-thirds of a vote for what?
To change the initiative.
To change the initiative. Yeah, fair enough.
You still there?
So,
you still there, Mike?
Yeah. Commissioner Stewart summarized that well. You know, ask them maybe between you and I, we'll get together on what some of the bills are and any of the bills that I think are moving around. If we look and we do want to actually take positions on them.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can do that. You know, and I'll email you. But so obviously the first one was the Medical Cannabis Act piece. So we're supporting Senate Bill 5887. But on the
I-5... That bill would not require a two-thirds vote,
that's,
I don't believe.
That's right. And then on the 502 thing, I think the clear positions that we already have established that we could look at any bill with are we support local flexibility when it comes to our ability to zone or ban or do anything, and we support local state shared revenue in any bill when it comes to, you know, taxes that may be derived from I-502 implementation. So those are two, yeah, you know, positions we can
just
look at any bill with.
The trick, we can, but the only problem is that the trick with these bills is that they'll start honing in on, yes, local government can get a share of the revenue, so long as they don't ban it.
Right, yeah.
Which is fine. It sounds, in theory, it sounds fair, but until you start thinking about the services we provide at the county versus cities. And so that's
the trick. You're right. I mean, you're going to be forced to deal with the court costs and any of the criminal justice thought, whether you and Bandit in the unincorporated area or not.
Right, and public health and community services.
Just purely a question, is there a question that the city of Vancouver would ban or not, or do we know?
My sense is that they will not be banning it.
Okay.
Yeah, they're in the process like we are, though. They're working towards a zoning code.
Okay.
So.
If we're ready to move on, I got one or two more items, and then I'm done. And the next one will just be very quick.
Steve was out of the room where we talked about eminent domain.
Oh, right. Back to that, I guess, for Commissioner Stewart.
You didn't get a chance to sign on that letter. Did you want to be on the letter in support of 6125?
Oh, is this the one prohibiting use or possession by another state, Bentonsville?
Yeah.
Thanks, though.
No.
Thanks for offering.
Okay.
Good luck. You want to make a bet?
What else you got, Mike?
Yesterday, Governor Inslee proposed a couple $100 million he would like to put towards education, and it was done with, you know, removing some tax loopholes and things like that. But once again, the non-resident sales tax exemption is a part of that. You all took a position last year, at least that was a board position. I don't know what the vote count was amongst the three of you, that we would support that program, or support that, the removal, I guess, of the non-resident. I'm not asking for that today. I'm just saying that that's been thrown out there, and if it looks like things are moving around, we can maybe revisit that in the future.
Well, I'm not up to speed on it. It sounds like there's two unrelated things there: the sales tax exemption and funding schools better. How are they connect? What's the sales tax part?
Part of it, when you take away the exemption that Oregon residents have when they come here not to pay our sales tax, if you take that away, it's going to boost revenue. So he's going to use the revenues for education.
A menu
only for
of
education, and nothing.
A portion of it.
Tax options State that. Tax exemptions that the governor proposed removing to apply $200 million education, I think specifically to teacher COLAs.
Yeah.
But I may have the COLA part wrong.
And the way it was last year and the way I'm understanding it already this year, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, is that the state portion of the sales tax that would be generated from sales, the increase in sales tax that they would expect to generate, that is the portion that is the state sales tax, would go to the education. The local portion would come to us as it usually is.
Right.
So we'd spend it on
that part. That's pretty important.
I don't have bill language for you to look at yet, so we can wait on that. I just wanted to make you aware that you may be reading about that or hearing about that.
Okay. Would that hurt our retail community, though?
Depends on how they draft it.
If they draft it in such a fashion that larger, they talked about a dollar figure before.
Mm-hmm.
Anything over $50 or something like that, it wouldn't.
They've had that, and I thought it was an elegant solution last year when there was the bill language to have it be a rebate instead of an automatic.
Oh, yeah.
So, because, how many times have you actually gotten the rebate certificate that you didn't turn in? And, and so it would force people to do that, which would be great.
Commissioners Mielke and Stewart, you're correct. There's been the rebate option was one, and then Commissioner Mielke, you mentioned the large purchases. Mm-hmm. That has been a discussion in the past, and then our taxation vehicles, that's in a different statute. And so previous iterations of this policy question have dealt with the statute that deals, I guess, with general sales tax, not with the car taxes. And so since they were separate, they would not have been affected. But again, we don't have language to look at just yet, so maybe we can hold off on that, but just be aware.
Okay.
And then, Axel, lastly, did we want to talk about the court technology issue?
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Will.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Mike. So there is a major renovation of court records technology happening in the state and in process. And it's, I think, a partnership of 37 of the counties. Pierce County is not involved, at least yet, and there's some movement afoot to where King County may not remain in. And anyhow, Mike and I had a good conversation this morning with Jeff Amram about the impact potentially of that and some other things happening with that and the funding for it at the state. So I don't know if you want to jump in and help me out. I'm kind of drowning here, Mike. It's a pretty complicated...
Yeah. So Axel touched on AOC, the Administrator of the Courts, was directed years ago to coordinate with the counties to come up with a new computer system to deal with both the way the court data is exchanged. I'm assuming so you could look at, people's history of charges or other court activity they've had. And then secondly, how your court system does their case management. So AOC's been working on that. Pierce County was never included. Apparently they've been doing their own system for 20 years, and I assume they're happy with it because they're not involved in this discussion. King County was in, and within the last week or so, King County has decided they will pull out, and they've notified folks over the weekend, I think, is when Jeff heard about it. I caught a tidbit late last week that this may be happening. The concern that Jeff has got and others in his position around the state, I have shared this information back to Spokane, and I think they have a similar concern, is that if King County pulls out to go run its own program, they're your bell cow in terms of the amount of revenue they generate, first of all. So if you pull their revenue out, you're hurting, all the other counties because of just their sheer volume of activity. And I also think it was a case of Jeff that I felt like he was more of the mindset that we should see this process through with the AOC. It's been imperfect. It's probably taken too long, but it's kind of where we are. And I think that I got the gist from Jeff that he felt as though this thing is going to work itself out. We're getting closer to the end. So I guess what I need was looking for from the board, and this is, I know this is pretty vague for you all. It's still vague to Axel and I, frankly, we're still trying to figure it all out. But I guess I think what I would need is your direction to just keep moving forward, keep digging into this, and we'll revisit it with more of a formal position from you all beyond to start engaging legislators on it maybe in the next week or so.
Mike, I have some concerns of question, you might say. We are in the process of updating technology with our sheriff's department, coinciding on a regional program down here to share information.
Yeah, this is a case management system for the courts, completely.
So this is something similar only for the courts.
Yeah. It's a superior court case management system. It's how they handle their business with their dockets and their cases. And I think the current system is called SCOMUS, and I think they're looking for a new generation technology.
It'd be interesting for us to go talk to our clerk and see. I haven't heard of any problem other than a pushback from our judges, some of the judges, not wanting to high-tech at all. So,
well, have we heard from
Absolutely.
Scott says
the judges said they're not going to do it.
What about our clerk?
I guess we'll have to check with them.
Yeah.
But so I guess moving forward, keeping your ear open.
I think it's probably as complicated, if not more, at the state level with all these counties involved and different things as it is on the local level. And it's a big change in how we're going to do things.
I think this is a $29 million effort.
Yeah.
And so if King County pulls out, that's $3 million out of the budget.
Can we make sure that Scott gets tied into this? That he gets to, because this is his front burner domain.
Yeah, absolutely.
We would look for a direction from him first, I would think.
And he could tell you, we have some judges down there just flat when he used the laptop.
Yeah. One, Jeff's the court administrator, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So we need more information for him about this from him, too.
Mike, I think that's, we'll just keep our ears open and keep working on it, but we need to involve some other people, the clerk, and obviously get some more information from Jeff. And he was going to go back and get some more information as well.
I apologize. I just am not well enough versed on it. I don't think either Axel or I are. You probably have some work that Jeff needs to get back with you commissioners to clarify it a little more, sounds like.
Okay.
So who's going to head out?
I'll do it. And we were going to have to do that anyways.
And I'll work it on my end up here and talk to my colleagues that are involved in it and just kind of get a feel for where things are. And we'll come back to you maybe next week about it.
Yeah, and work with WASAC on it. Okay, anything else, Mike?
Not for me. We will have a hearing schedule come out tonight, and maybe some other bills will pop up that I will just coordinate with you, Axel, if there's stuff I want us to take a look at taking a position on, and we'll go from there.
Sounds good. Anything else? All right, thanks, Mike.
Take care.
I've got just the one I'd like to interject here regarding this, the property tax improvements. Certainly the directions that our treasurer is trying to go here are good things, but there's a third option that doesn't really require the change in state law in order for us to move forward with convenience of people being able to pay online. These bills basically authorize the difference between what the payer submits, that amount, and what the receiver receives. There's a fee that either gets added and upfront to the payer, or a fee that gets deducted from the basically from the receiver, and that's defined by state law. The other thing that perhaps does not need state authorization is an arrangement with the processor that says whatever gets collected does not get modified. What gets collected, that amount goes to the receiver, period. And the arrangement, the contract with that processor says you keep track of whatever those transaction fees, which are somewhat much less than a dollar, and then we at a county, by our own county policy, says we'll reimburse the processor for that amount. And that would be just simply a convenience that we could elect as a local policy level here.
You know, it could be a savings also, because you're downstairs. If you walk in to physically pay your bill, you have an employee on hand that's going to take 15 minutes to half an hour to process your bill. That's not free. So when you look at the cost of process, it's actually maybe could be a savings.
I think you guys are talking about something that's a different issue than any of the three that are on the list.
It is. It's said that this requires state law change. Well, this other one would require...
But it's not even on point to any of these three. I mean, the first one is about conducting online auctions. So that's the first one.
Yeah, it's not that.
The second one is allowing county treasurers the option to absorb only the cost of automatic clearinghouse and federal wire transactions, which lowers the cost to work on, to do that's process
that's
online.
That's about the same thing.
I don't think so. I mean, all it's saying
is
absorbing
the cost.
It's saying that right now there's a processing fee associated with the credit card that we can't give because it'd be a gift of public funds, which is the same thing as the third one, which is giving authority so that we don't have gift of public funds problems.
Right. That's the same thing. Whether it's in this bill for that transaction or for any other transaction.
But these are dealing with specific things. Clearinghouse and federal wire. The third one is certain hardship cases. It's not a general.
We need legislation to absorb cost.
Correct. And this is doing it in specific cases and not doing it as a general proposition. You guys are talking about it as a general proposition.
Yeah. It's well, another issue down the way.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's a separate issue. These are targeted, which gives them a better chance of passing.
Yeah, and certainly we support that. Well, actually, this is really a legal question, where Chris Horn can answer whether or not we have the ability.
Reading the bill might include it, may not.
Well, why wouldn't we just ask the treasurer, because it's his domain, not ours, and see if he wants to look into it, like you would do with Scott Weber or other elected officials. And I mean,
we could do that too.
Well, this supports our treasurer.
Having our attorney go look into this is us going and doing the work, as opposed to saying, hey, here's an idea you might want to think of, just like we would do with Scott or any of the other elected officials that you defer to.
Depends who wrote the bill.
If it's a Democrat, you don't. If it's an R, you do. What are we doing here?
We want to make sure that Doug Lasher, we wouldn't want to do anything that he doesn't support.
No, so, I think all the things he's proposing are positives, and I think what we're talking about there.
No,
it may or may not.
It's just a different issue.
It depends on the verbiage of that in the actual bill.
Well, I can dig into that if you want.
Why don't you just ask Doug Lasher?
Yeah, exactly.
Give our knowledge. We've been pushing a little bit looser, and his explanation to us was that it was such a small handful, like under 15, that they could do it, and I think they're going to start doing it, hard copy type thing, but it'd be nice to have a little bit better program. Because the program that he's proposing is that you pay current bill and so much of your back bill, and sometimes you're like a whole bunch of people who just pay.
This one isn't installments. Like, he was talking about taking installments. This is, like we said, this is different. This is saying we could forgive the interest and penalty portion of them, just take the money that's owed us.
It's interesting. We've been pushing for this other for a couple of years.
No doubt.
And he comes up with this.
I don't know if he came up with it, but the treasurers are pushing for it. I don't know if he's the only one.
All right.
I'm done.
Okay, we got the unscheduled topic here. Poor Oliver.
Yes. Sorry. I did forget to put Cheryl on the agenda, and I don't know how I could have possibly done that, but it's been a busy week. I'll tee this up, and then Cheryl will slap me down when I get it wrong. We participate, Clark County participates as a member of CRESA in support of the Regional Disaster Preparedness Organization, which is an organization created by MOU in partnership in Oregon. They have always
got one-on-ones on all.
Yes, yes, we did.
Yeah, don't go too far in the background.
Okay. Right.
Well, only so many hours in the day.
Sorry, I didn't realize we made it.
We're doing it all around. Yeah, sure.
The bottom line is they've always relied on and got a grant in the past, and they've used that grant to pay for an administrative position to coordinate some work. That grant's gone away. CRESA, under recommendation from staff, because we don't have funding at CRESA, to pay the $35,000, which would be our portion of the allocation to pay for that position, voted not to recommend to do that. because of that, that kicks it back to the counties and the cities to decide if they want to regionally put that portion of money into the partnership. So Cheryl's here today to give some direction as to whether the county wants to pick up the bill for that.
For
$35,000.
When it kicked back to $35,000, and that $35,000 being kicked back for the city and the county?
Well, it would be our share of the total.
It would be our per capita share to pay for what was lost when the grant went away.
Or you could pay the whole amount, they said.
Yeah, the total budget's $175,000. It principally paid for an administrator.
Yeah.
Anna mentioned in the one-on-ones that with or without an administrator, the same work will go on because we have memberships on all the committees, exactly. And those committees are self-sustaining. I think each of you said individually that you didn't support paying a $35,000. What we need now is a public action, a majority of the board to say yes or no.
So we get no additional benefit essentially, and we pay $35,000 for it.
Exactly.
It's a tough call.
And it's on.
I can't believe you brought it to us.
And it's on. Okay. So I think you got directions.
Okay.
We're gonna participate.
Took 60 seconds and you waited 60 minutes to get it.
Thank you.
We blame it on that.
It's Axel's fault, really. Yeah.
All the bad stuff always is, it seems like. I got to get this letter. Oh, we got Oliver coming in. Mr. Lasher. I'll seat my chair temporarily.
Hey, Oliver. What's up, Chris?
You going to go do the memo there, Axel?
I hope this isn't going to be Oliver's one-hour request for a work group.
No, I don't know.
What's that?
Actually, Oliver requested a one-hour work session on the comprehensive plan.
Oh, right. Yeah, so Oliver has three topics on the agenda today. Two involve potential budget requests, and the comprehensive plan update is Commissioner Stewart, you're an expert on this. It's a very complex process, and Oliver and I discussed this, and based on the number of interactions with the board that are going to be required, rather than having his staff burn up time doing multiple 10 steps requesting work session for this and work session for that, what we are asking for today, and I'll let Oliver pick this up, is to present a plan to you, let you know what all the requirements are, and Oliver, I think, even has proposed dates. If we could get a blessing for his plan, and then we can just schedule the work sessions as necessary, as opposed to
get her done.
Get her done and eliminate some of this work.
You can go back and scrutinize his plan. That's the idea. That's usually
to the degree that you think appropriate.
The starting point. I mean,
Statutorily required pieces of it that where we have to be involved, and I think that's more of what this is.
So basically, your request is, can you put together a session, a string of work sessions to get the whole job done? You're not asking for extra budget or anything like that. You're just saying, put me on the schedule, we'll get it done.
Well, that's topic two.
That's the first request.
Oh, okay, but the first one is just simply, can you move forward and with schedule? I'm already good with that.
Got it.
Wow.
Number one's done.
Okay. So you don't even have to share that. I don't have to share it. Okay.
Just do it.
The second item is we have no funding from the state. We used to receive funding to do the plan update from the state in the neighborhood of close to $300,000 to $400,000. There is no funding.
I heard that song before.
Yeah, so there is no funding. In other words, the local government will be absorbing the cost to do
it. It was a matter of time before it got shuffled down to the county.
Is there the governor's supplemental budget had money for the growth management division? Because I asked at WASAC about funding for growth management services and said, look, we don't have any technical support anymore at all or grants. And I was told that there was money that was being put by the governor in the budget. Is that just for staff, or is that potentially for grants? Do you know?
It's both for staff, and no one knows whether they will.
But it's not for grants.
It's not for grant, right?
No, that's not fair.
It's not for grant. And if we do, if the legislature changes their mind and put money for funding, we may not receive it on time.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So what I'll be asking the board, or just putting you on notice, is that I'll be asking for funding through the next supplemental, which is going to be coming up very soon. That's really what I would like the the board to know.
You was at the meeting this morning on the budget meeting.
I was there, Commissioner, yes. I was there. But
Do you remember the word fragile?
Yes. Okay. And that's why I've been proposing that we go slow in terms of what we are doing. But we have the, you know, hard deadline. We have to complete this by June 30th, 2016. So I don't see that changing. So just heads up, I will be asking for funding. You may ask me how much am I thinking about. I don't have a number that I can share with the board today. If the preliminary work that my staff did to indicate how much this have cost in the past, you will be shocked. The number that I have here is $540,000.
Mm-hmm.
Consultant.
Which is what it took last time?
What it took last time, yes.
But we have a significantly smaller scope, yes. Narrower scope than we did in the 0407 plan. So
right.
It should be significantly less than that.
I like that to some of that.
Yeah. So
I assume also that you're not just to come back with a number. You're going to come back with specific line items that say this is if we did this, this is what it would cost.
Yes.
Item by item.
Yes.
Great.
In my request, I would do so.
Yeah, and also the impacts of not receiving the funding, what it would do to the schedule and that sort of thing.
Along those lines, we're going to use the same staff that worked on other projects today, so it might have to come back to an idea of priority of projects or kicking something else down the road in order to fund it.
That will be the call of the board. What do you peel off out of my work program?
That's why I'm looking at the general fund money where I peel out.
Yeah. Well, is the comp plan already in your work plan or no?
No, it's not.
Well, so yeah, it would mean changes things.
So, along with that, the dollar amount would be also the trade-off that would allow us to say if you were to use existing staff, what could feasibly and responsibly be shuffled until we get this.
And right. What would the savings be?
No,
that's true. I think the board should be made aware that, and you're correct, Commissioner Stewart, it depends on the level of review, and I'm glad that Chris is here, but if what we are doing rises to the level of a full-blown EIS work or environmental review, we don't have the resources to do it in-house. So while our staff, as is constituted today, will still be doing other work related to the comp plan, when it comes to environmental review, that has to be done.
Yeah, but the environmental review, so a lot of it depends on, so what are we evaluating, first of all? Are we evaluating parcels that were already evaluated as part of the 07 EIS, or are these new? Because
yes.
You have to look at all of the impacts on the areas that we're talking about bringing in. And if it's a new area that we're talking about, then yeah, we've got to get new environmental analysis. But we're also talking about significantly less than we did before. So even if we do an EIS, I would expect that it would be significantly lower cost because there's just not as much to go have to do the evaluation on.
I agree. I don't know what the cities are going to be proposing, so that's why working with them would be key. When we do, in the past, when we receive funding from the state,
right.
The cities have turned that funding towards doing the EIS.
Right.
You know,
so tell the cities. You want to look at what?
Yeah. No, you can't.
Yeah.
We can absolutely see contribution.
Yeah. Yes. So that's all I wanted to discuss on item number two. On item number three, if I can move to that quickly, that's the industrial land bank. It's my understanding from Mr. Horenstein that he will be submitting a proposal, an application, if not Friday, this Monday. And if that's the case, he's going to be proposing that we use Section 367, which will require master planning and other environmental review, which, again, I will come to the board because the way that our code is written and the board approved, it will become a county-initiated action. Mm-hmm. Who will do the master planning? Who will do the environmental review? It will fall on the county unless the board directs Steve to
Before you go into the numbers on that, though, the areas they're talking about for industrial land bank, for a rural industrial land bank, were analyzed as part of the 2007 plan. Every acre of it was analyzed as part of the final EIS of 07, because it's those properties, it's Lagler properties, and all of them were analyzed and master planned as part of the industrial overlay. So what I, before you bring a number, I'd want to know, all right, what can we, what value can we get from the work that's already been done in the master planning work that we already did? Because there's no requirement within the section that I saw that says you got to recreate the wheel and do it over. It just says you have to do, you have to have master planning, you have to actually have the environmental impacts analyzed, and there's more. So there's probably a little bit more we'd have to do, but it seems like we can build on what we already have.
Do we have a discovery corridor at that time?
Commissioner, you're right.
It's not on discovery, right?
We did not do
that. Not on the discovery corridor.
We did it on Lagler.
Yeah.
I was just asking what we did.
Commissioner, we did not do master plan for the Lagler. What we did was environmental review, and Chris can speak to that.
Railroad industrial overlay was a master plan, and it's within the railroad industrial overlay. So just pull from that.
I'll look into the document that we have. I don't think we did a master plan for that piece. The second item, Commissioner, is that my understanding of the CEPA and EIS, if it's older than 3 years, it's no longer valid. But we can rely on that. But I know that if you have a prepared EIS that is 3 to 4 years old, you cannot no longer rely on that.
Is that CEPA, NEPA? Which requirement is that? Is that within the section for the Rural Industrial Land Bank?
Within the way that I understand how you use EIS document,
okay.
Right.
Well, let's go back and look at that, because that would be a huge problem.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I would think that unless it certainly, if something has significantly changed, then you would have to go back and revisit that. But you would only do that for the change, and you could inherit what hasn't changed. Because
right.
Certainly their intent is not to make work, just do it all over again.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Because of which bureaucrats you
have. That's true.
If you do it a second time, you'll end up with the same exact document.
Yeah.
That's true. And
we'll just see what we can build on.
Yeah,
I guess.
I'll see what we can build on. I'm just giving board heads up that these two request may be made to the commissioner, so that when you see it, there are no surprises to you. Okay.
Good job.
Cool.
Okay.
Good to see you, Chris. Always glad you're here.
So the plan for that, are you going to give us the plan as far as, and then just kind of leave it with us as far as for the work session stuff, or get it to us, or what's your plan?
My plan was to give this to the board, have you look at it and bless it, then I walk away.
But you got the blessing first.
Yeah,
then hand it to
us.
Go ahead and hand
still
it out to us so we know what it looks like.
All right.
Yeah, what did we approve?
Yeah. Are these all the same?
Can you hang around for the work session business? Okay.
Just one page.
It is one page.
Got it. Okay. Cool. Thanks, man.
Okay, that exhausts the old business section. Unless there are comments. So, Commissioner Mielke, we're on the commissioner report.
One item. Already getting help on some a couple of development proposals that are going through, and I'll. Getting great help from Heath and from Marty. But one item, I had a constituent meeting a few weeks ago, and it's been on my list to bring up, but I just haven't had a chance to. In the past 100 years, there have been two officers in CCSO that have been killed in the line of duty. One of them we all know, and that's Brad Crawford. And Brad Crawford, we have Brad Crawford Park that's been named after him. The other one is Officer Souders. And Officer Souders was killed, I believe, in 1979. And there was never any memorial. There was never any memorial placed for Officer Souders. Officer Souders' adult son met with me about a couple of issues, and one of the issues that he mentioned is that he wished at some point there would be some recognition of his father's service and falling in
sure.
the line of duty. And his suggestion, so Officer Souders was gunned down on the corner of 78th and St. John's. There's a little minute mart across from where Brian's is, Peck's is, not Brian's, but the one on the southeast corner. That's where he actually was killed.
Hmm.
And so the idea that his adult son had was, well, you know, I don't know if you can name things after him. And I know that the park is named for Luke Jensen, which is great, but there you have a public works operations center that's right over there. And he's like, it would be really, he said, our family, I know, would really appreciate the remembrance of having it named.
What? They were talking about moving.
Are we talking about moving public works office?
I heard they were looking at a different location.
No. In my time at the county, I've not heard that once.
So his ask was that I asked, do we as a board have authority to do these kinds of things? And the answer was yes, we do.
And we did that for the juvenile detention. We named it after Judge Harris.
Exactly. And then there's the Art Curtis Children's Justice Center, which was also us that named it that. So the request that was made is that it be named in honor of his fallen father, who was CCSO. It's just a public works office.
Yeah.
Like
sure. That sounds like the right thing to do.
It seemed like a relatively simple thing that I know that from the sounds of it, he and his family would. And his family comes to the memorial.
The Fallen Heroes.
Fallen Heroes commemoration that we do every year. I see his family there. And it's just one of those things that I it's not that they begrudge Sergeant Crawford's remembrance of this. It's just they're kind of like,
in addition to.
It's in addition to that. They're like, gosh, I wish they would remember my dad, too.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
Which, you know.
Too bad we don't have a monument.
Sure.
In front of the
make it happen?
Yeah, make it happen.
Well, apparently his name is on a little plaque somewhere over there by the smoking area. There's like this.
Never go there.
But, yeah, and no one knows where it is and what it is. And I'm like, come on.
It's a more appropriate place.
I know. And apparently Sheriff Lucas actually served with Officer Souders. And so I don't think the sheriff would have any issues with it, obviously. I mean, it was someone that he served with.
Well, have you checked with the sheriff just to make sure that they want to be part of this, I expect.
Yeah, that would be the next step. That would be the first step was, is this something that we would be open to? The next step would be asking Sheriff Lucas, look, this is what we would like to do. What do you think about this?
Do we have something better?
Sure.
I don't know. The reason they said that was because that was right by where it happened.
Location specific, so
that's why.
That sounds really good. But and in addition to that, and it's really what you're really saying would be that Sheriff Lucas would lead on this. Let them, because I mean, you talk about
it's his guy.
I assume that.
But given it's a commissioner facility, we'd have to be involved.
It's our responsibility to name, but it was his guy, so that's where the partnership would have to be.
Great.
Okay.
And then we can put a little monument up there and put a sign on the building.
There's a sign out there as you come in.
Right. Yeah, it just says Clark County Public Works Operations.
Yeah, so we call it, have a name.
We change that.
Souders like Yard, Souders,
something.
And then ask Mary to work with the sheriff and set up a little ceremony for the family.
Yeah, we should have a ceremony.
I know the family would greatly appreciate it. That's excellent. Thank you. We'll get to work. Yes. I'll work with Mark to get with Gary, with Sheriff Lucas.
Yes, and there's there's more to it than just simply the intent. And there's got to be somebody that really kind of can make that really done with style and right.
Well, fair enough. Come back to the sheriff for that. Our part would be authorizing that to be designated as such.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless they might come up with another suggestion, right? I think it's a good thing.
Cool.
Great. Great job.
Thank you. Appreciate it. That's all I have for today.
Okay.
There you go. David?
I think I'm good. I'm good.
Kelly? Mary? Somebody else? Okay, I'll see what I got.
Did Ashley have anything else? You just kind of ran out.
Well, I've got a question. Is it kind of Jewelberg?
Jewelberg, go ahead.
Remember Joel from Joel's Farm?
Yeah.
He had his idea of doing something out there at the Heritage Farm.
Yep, right.
Are you still working on that?
I sent you some information. He submitted an application, a proposal to the technical advisory committee that we have for 78th Street, and his plan initially was to have a tailgate farmers market on the west side, where we have the nice safe entrance, and we have an area of hard-packed grass and dirt where people could park, and then they'd erect their little tailgate farmers market in the parking area, just to the south of the building. We're perfectly open to that. His proposal to you involved expensive improvements to the intersection at 25th and 78th Street, and extensive grading and graveling and erection of a building and bringing in water and power and sewer. And basically we asked him, what resources do you have? And he doesn't have any resources.
Here's where I'm going with that, is that someone offers an idea and it includes all of the things you just listed there, which kind of complicates it and makes kind of pushes it out. But there may be a grain of a seed that we could actually take that idea and implement and accomplish the goal maybe in a different way, in a more practical way.
Right.
So rather than let it die, are we looking at alternative ways that something like that could happen? More practical?
The tailgate farmers market idea would be a great starting point. It would be extremely low cost. We would be able to evaluate the demand at that location for fresh produce. Mm-hmm. Do it on weekends. Mm-hmm. Evaluate it. And to the degree that we could open up the grounds and make more land available for additional farmers who would want to come, mm-hmm. I think it would be a great thing. But when we start talking about constructing buildings and improving intersections, there's no funding.
But part of the master plan for Heritage is to have, because the infrastructure improvement, at least as far as the intersection, not interchange, but the intersection piece of it, is it's already stubbed. What we're talking about is actually having a driveway entrance that would require some grading, require some paving. It's not insignificant, but kind of as the, like, what other, what options are there out there? Maybe you start with the tailgate, but the master plan includes that stubbed entrance that we're going to need anyway. Whether this happens or not, you need another entrance coming in and out of Heritage Farm. That is the plan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we should already have, if we don't, it should be easy enough to get. Like, how much is that going to cost us just to bring it in there? Not to go up over the hill and all that kind of craziness, but just to go in there and provide another access point for ingress, egress, and then you build it from there. And so at least looking at that little piece, as opposed to building the buildings and wiring and plumbing and all that. I mean, I get that.
Well, I think it'd be, like you said, it's always stubbed off, probably a cul-de-sac there with a gate there.
Yeah, and there's a little grading that you have to do associated with that to be able to bring the driveway in there. But nevertheless, it's the simpler of...
It might be a good project to start with the equipment we have.
No, because I agree. There's somewhere between, throwing produce out the back of your truck in our existing parking lot and, a fully enclosed, heated, place that also has all new paved parking and all that. There's somewhere in between that.
So
it's just Joe's going to ask for it all. I mean, so, it's our job to kind of say, well, maybe, what about this? And I bet they would be happy.
Well, actually, a step in that direction, it's kind of like if you're going to design a product and you want to build a million of them, you start with a prototype. And this could be a first step and see, how well does it work? What do you need? Yeah, be able to have a little graveled area, be able to have that entrance, because right now they have to have extra traffic directors out there because it's kind of unsafe to get in that entrance with volumes of traffic. So, in other words, see what you can find. Simple.
Yeah.
Get it started and run the experiment.
To me, simple was we have an entrance, we have a parking area, we have a flat space for tailgate, for people to park and sell produce. To me, that was simple. Mm-hmm. Improving an intersection and putting a new gate in and grading and graveling, not so simple. I can gravitate to not so simple.
So you have option A.
Easily.
So we invite you to present option A, which is how can that whole concept be tested out with existing resources? That sounds like you're proposing a step number one. And option B would be, what if we were to somehow come through the other entrance? What's the minimum cost to actually try it out? So that we can configure, or we could evaluate option A and option B.
The cost to improve the intersection is not wasted money. It contributes to the future of the property. So,
I mean, it's part of the. I don't know that it's on our 20-year because it's the ingress. It wouldn't be because it's just a driveway. It's not an actual roadway.
Right.
But for the Heritage Farm, it's probably on there. And if we make it part of the master plan, maybe we seek some road grants. State stuff. I don't know.
Especially being that it's a heritage farm, there should be available grants and that
We've
kind of
got,
thing. There's a lot of people that care about that.
Mark's folks have gotten some great grants already for, for Heritage Farm. Yeah. You know, it's tight.
Yeah,
but they've done great.
Yeah, the best news is that Ron Waringa got us $5.25 for the new parking lot, the demonstration.
Really?
Low impact development.
Yep.
Perfect. Oh. Good for
on the west side.
We'll buddy up to him. On the west side.
We'll take it.
Yeah,
we'll take
what we can get. The vision can morph in a way that gets her done that is low cost, and you get a grant, and it's like everybody wins.
Good call.
Okay, was
any other do-overs?
Not yet.
Okay.
Okay, move on quickly then.
Yeah. I'm trying to get with Bob what we have before us, the clean water fees and some polluters fees being considered. And we're trying to get numbers from Bob. Bob passed it down to Ron Waringa, I think it is. And they're trying to give us some more firm numbers rather than have just one fee. There's some other people out there responsible.
Is that are we going to be talking about that tomorrow at the retreat, or is it not ready for prime time?
No, actually, if you look at the agenda, Commissioner, you'll see that we've got clean water legal and compliance costs on there for a work session to discuss the full range of clean water issues.
Okay.
And, you know, we have the $600,000 settlement payment to make here shortly, and then we have to address the recurring...
Right?
Pardon me?
Very soon, right?
Has that...
Hasn't been
signed
yet.
Okay. When signatures are affixed to some document, that's when the clock begins.
Well, it's when it becomes part of the court's decision.
Okay, and that has yet to occur.
Hasn't happened.
Are we ahead of the game here? We're looking at a tool to get it on the property taxes this year. And I'm talking with Peter Van Ortwick, and that's coming up really fast because they mail those out in April. And I'm not sure if they mail them out in March or not. So I'm under the impression that this month that we have to have something put together if we're going to do that.
The first $500,000 payment is payable by June 30th, 2015.
Yes.
So we have a fair amount of time to put together the mechanism to collect what we need to make that payment.
But we will have collected nothing unless we start.
Right.
We can collect in the spring of 2015 and have that money available to make a payment in June.
And we have to make that in June? In February. January.
June.
Attorney fees.
No, the attorney fees we have to pay within 60 days of this event. And that will we're proposing to pay that out of the permanent reserve loan.
It'd be nice if we can hit a time frame to start this year.
Okay. Well, we'll make that part of the work session. The proposal that Don Benton and his staff are making is that we make whatever fee changes in 2015, which would be next year.
When is the work session?
Well,
we're asking for permission to schedule it today, and once you give us permission, we'll get it on the schedule.
It would be good to, if there's an option about timeliness of somehow responsibly covering the court-mandated cost of $600,000 in attorney fees, that we would make that a priority so that if we have the option that somehow that would be covered this year, that we at least would schedule things early enough where we have time to publicly notice it if we need to for a hearing or whatever steps are necessary.
All that, yes, we will definitely, if we're increasing fees, we'll definitely allow the public to comment. The $600,000 legal fees, John Payne established a permanent a loan mechanism from the permanent reserve to Tri Mountain Golf Course and to Clean Water because they're enterprise funds. Clean Water is making use of that fund now to maintain liquidity because their revenues stream is, there are two peaks to it. Mm-hmm. November they collect, and they collect in April and May. That permanent reserve is what we plan to use to pay the $600,000 in court fees. And then when the fees are increased for, you know, whether it's a surcharge or what have you, then that loan will be paid back by the Clean Water Fund to the permanent reserve.
I have a question. So is that cash that's already been collected that's sitting in that reserve, or are we talking about adding to like a line of credit or something where it actually ends up increasing the debt?
It would be a loan from the permanent reserve, cash that the county owns. So it's like an
We're borrowing from ourselves.
It's an interfund loan, And so we're borrowing from ourselves, and then when Clean Water has the liquidity to liquidate the debt, they would do so.
And I assume, is there some interest that adds to that when it gets paid back?
Oh, sure, yes. When funds loan money to other funds, they have to charge.
Is it like 1% or what is it?
I think it's the same as the investment pool.
State minimum limit, so which is I guess 1.5 or something.
If we can't put something together before, that would be the option that we would do. If we could put something on the property tax for April, we may not have to do that.
So we need to find out what that date is for that cutoff from.
Yeah. Now, excuse me.
Plan ahead.
I was having trouble getting an answer from Peter.
Because it's a fee, it's not part of the levy process. The assessor's timelines for getting it scheduled and making it a legal collection don't apply.
Oh, okay.
This is a fee.
Fair enough.
And so whenever the board decides to change the fees, we can make them effective.
It's a fee, not a tax.
Yeah.
Well, I really have to see whether or not they're tied to property taxes, right? Because that bill was out.
They are separate and distinct from property taxes. They simply go out on the property tax bill to save money.
Right.
It makes it easier for PI. My escrow company pays my clean water fee and my property taxes at the same time.
When I was counseling, they didn't want to do that. They wanted to get it separate.
But if you count up the postage and the printing costs of a separate clean water bill, they save quite a bit of money by combining them.
But so we might have that as an option, is what you're saying, because if the timelines don't apply, then we can come back and have it be part of the work session discussion, and maybe it's an option for us.
Yeah. Cool. So if we can get
the options open.
Cool. If we can get permission to schedule that work session, we will front load it.
I have to get more. I'm trying to get numbers.
Yeah,
I'm trying to get some numbers.
Yeah, and Tom Donovan's done a really good job of coming up with various scenarios. If we increase the fee by this much, here's how much it yields.
Don't know anything about that.
Pardon?
Don't know anything about that, because my intent is to keep the fee as low as possible and look at other avenues and other options that we have.
Sure. Okay. We'll have a spirited discussion.
Yep.
Okay. So we can schedule that one.
Yes.
Is that okay, Tom?
Rather be ahead of it than late.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
Sooner than later, because I'm thinking we have a month to get it done. Mm-hmm.
Yes, as soon as board time's over, I will have it scheduled.
Okay.
You want me to leave now and come back? I can do that.
You want to talk about today?
I don't have a little round get-her-done buttons.
I want the Staples Easy button, if you don't mind.
You handed out some other stuff here. This is the new style of what this used to be.
And we're talking about that tomorrow at the retreat.
Oh, okay, and that's what this part of. Okay, that's why I was making sure.
Yeah, we can talk about that at length tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay, so we have three other work session requests, if we can go through them. Oliver's asking for two. One for the 2016 Comprehensive Growth Management Plan.
That's in addition to what you just said we said yes to?
Well, actually, we have permission to schedule your stuff. So
you have permission.
So we already have permission for that one.
The next one will be on the 26th.
Okay. So it's the first one of these, is what you're saying.
Yeah, the first one of these will be
a mental fart, sorry. Okay, surface mining overlay.
Wait a minute. Let me get caught up. I had a big question mark.
We're not doing vacancies yet.
Why overdue an hour on his request?
Oh, for the work session.
Oh, for the work session. The one that I'm requesting that is on your board time agenda will be on the 26th, which I've already gotten an okay. Why am I needing 1 hour? This will be a work session where the board will discuss. It's a policy discussion on job focus.
Okay. I think it's good that we end up scheduling enough time for a work session for us to have meaningful dialogue. And because it's been really tight and some of these other, we cut ourselves short right when we're in the middle of some good questions and conversations. But one way we can use that time wisely would be to minimize the amount of presentation time walking through a PowerPoint.
Sure.
Because that's one-way communication, and you could potentially provide that presentation ahead of time, so whoever wants to do the homework can, and then we can use that time in a more two-way conversation, so we can actually get work done, make decisions of how to move ahead.
As long as, and we talked about this a little bit from CTRN, as long as there is at least some I agree in shortening education. That part. Yeah, a little bit of education at the front for those who might not know that aren't us and didn't have the chance to do the homework to say, this is where we're at, you know, and just show the baseline
exactly.
at least.
The balance there. So cool. that because Good. It would be unfair for us to assume everybody in the community who's interested in this already knows. So there needs to be a minimum amount so they understand. And then potentially, if we want to drill down deeper, we can. But the other end of the spectrum, as we walk through the whole thing in great detail, I mean, hardly had any time left to make any decisions or discussion.
I'll do my best. And I think for the fact that the board is getting the cities to participate, this is one area where the cities will have some input. As well as others, because now we're talking about, you know, what is the board decision on employment forecast, which we will then be working with the smaller cities to allocate that.
Yeah.
So this will be a major decision point for the board, and the cities will want to weigh in.
And I would assume also that whatever you can do to equip the cities with information ahead of time, then they're going to come with the advantage of being able to participate in a more meaningful way as well.
Yes, I'll do that. One area of my concern to me now, and I'll share that with the board, is that the cities may come to the table and want the board to change some of the planning assumptions.
The last time we talked about that, the cities were in the room. The council hadn't even considered put it on their calendar yet.
Yes.
Right. So I wouldn't worry about it. I think we should still move ahead. And I think what you're saying here, this is more direction from the board. Mm-hmm. And answering that question would take an hour to do that, so that's the reason why.
Okay, sir.
And then the other one was also Oliver on the surface mining.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. We've had at least one work session so far.
Yes, two. Remember, we had that one before the Planning Commission, and then we have one after.
What are you bringing back to us this time?
What I'm bringing back to the board is I want to be able to present to the board what were the rationale that the task force used in making the recommendation that they made to the Planning Commission, and also the rationale that the Planning Commission used in reaching the recommendation that they made to
you
the
need
board.
A work session on that? I mean, that's information that I can look at on my own and kind of go through, but it seems like we're setting ourselves up a little bit by doing a work session.
There are two issues, Commissioners. I think the other question that I think I want the board also to make a decision, and I'm meeting with our legal counsel and other staff right after this meeting, that is the recommendation of the PC to what do we do for monitoring and enforcement. I can put something together, but I'm going to need the board to have some conversation on that. It may lead to a proposal to hire someone dedicated to mining, but I don't want to bring something, you know, to the board without having some conversation that's where the board wants to go.
I think that's way out ahead of us, because we were talking about almost everyone's going to have to be a conditional use permit. And everyone's going to be different. So what we're talking about now are sites.
But that's a part of the recommendation that's coming to you, or could come to you, is how we deal with these long-term code enforcement problems. You know, with Yakult Mountain Quarry or Livingston, what we're going through with some of that right now, and phone calls.
Policy and
conditional
use.
Requests for Tebow Pit right now. So one thing we've really struggled with, and I've talked to the board about it before, is how as a staff we deal with these big, bulky conditional use permits, mainly for quarries that have dozens and dozens of conditions that are prospective. And one way we've discussed that as a staff is to have somebody specially assigned in code enforcement that's looking at these conditions on a monthly basis and making sure things are happening as they should be. Because we are complaint-driven body when it comes to code enforcement, and I think for good reason, except for when it comes to these large CUPs. Mm-hmm. I don't think we should wait for things to get to the level of a complaint before we're looking into them, because they have so many prospective conditions. So that's what we're struggling with in terms of needing direction.
So we've already done step one in omitting half of the proposed mining sites to avoid the confrontation. And there's going to be some confrontation, even though we've pushed them way outside of everything else. But even then,
under conditional use, you'll have some control over it. No matter, and it could be very, very minor, but it'd be something.
I think one of the questions is whether the conditions that have been imposed are being complied with. And there were a total of 4 Planning Commission hearings to deal with this, with the overlay update, and that included extensive revisions to the ordinance, recommended revisions to the ordinance and to the comprehensive plan. Some of those revisions deal with monitoring and enforcement, and some very new ways of looking at how to do that. Some interesting proposals on
that. I think when we get to that point, and if it's a dust issue and they're supposed to be covered, law enforcement would be enforcing that. Environmental department would be looking at water runoff and things. I don't think we need to create a whole new code enforcement for mines.
Okay. Yeah, and the board had, at your last work session, you pretty much focused on the policy and the map itself. We did not get to the development regulation, so you did not see what it is that the Planning Commission recommended on the development regulation. So okay. I don't want to go to a hearing without having the board review that.
Yeah, just the feedback on it. I think we ended up with some questions or some action items or something from our last work session that says we really need this in order to move forward. Right. That's one thing. We want to make sure we do that. Mm-hmm. The other is to divide this into the mines that are or the quarries that are already in operation and determine what's the best way for us to make sure that we don't end up with non-compliance issues where the neighbors are troubled, versus policies that have to do with expansions and new developments. As far as I know, there's nobody that's asking to expand or new quarries that are asking to be opened. And that would be a, if we keep that kind of separate, and, excuse me, and we end up focusing just simply on these, that middle one, which is how do we make sure that these they operate responsibly now. That's really the focus now, right?
Yes.
So if we focus on that and reserve as the next phase anything, what about something new that helps us to kind of break it down into bite-sized pieces to accomplish it?
Well, in theory, on the compliance side, once you set it for those that are in existence, you'll just apply it to anyone that would come in, and so you'd have it dealt with for any of the new, and you use what's happening with the existing to kind of say, all right, what did we do wrong, and what can we do better?
Sounds
to
good.
To be able to keep it simple that way, and Axel's been dealing with them, you know, the outfall of when we don't follow it up, and so have we, where previous boards set the, you know, years ago, set the conditions, mm-hmm. but because no one was ever watching them, now we get yelled at because somehow we're not enforcing them, so... Mm-hmm.
I know that listening to the mining companies, they don't want any conditional use permits.
Right.
But by having a conditional use permit process, every mine would be different and would address them.
It's true.
If you open it up to the public, they'll be looking at the color. We want certain color trucks. You don't want to go there.
No.
You want to go to those things that are actually adversely affecting them. And by the location of the map, and there are some of the mines that are being proposed to be expanded.
So, well, in my understanding, when they were saying, hey, we'll sit down and we'll look at what the Planning Commission recommended versus what the task force recommended, I thought we were going backwards to the map and to the policies, which I don't think is valuable for us to do in a work session. But
right. But
the implementing regulations to do exactly what you said, like what's the bite-sized chunk of... How do we make sure that, you know, those that are in existence, because we don't see any new ones right now, but how do we make sure that those are being monitored effectively? Mm-hmm. I mean, that might be valuable to actually talk about before we go to hearing.
Yes, and for existing mines, there's the idea of conditional use permit really is irrelevant because they're already licensed. They're already permitted.
Mm-hmm.
So it really comes down to what do we do for enforcement? Mm-hmm. I would expect, suggest that Axel works with Oliver, you guys kind of brainstorm together and then to come up with some suggestions, and then we can chew on that.
when the planning commission gave us suggestions, I think, is what they're saying.
Starting with the planning commission recommendations.
About code enforcement of existing. Mm-hmm. This is having to do with the whole new mining.
Well, the whole new mining is kind of like the next step. It needs to be done, but we...
This is what we're talking about here.
Is it? I thought we were also talking about the enforcement of current mines.
This is the mining overlay.
Right. And my goal is to see if I can bring the board to a point where we can go to a hearing and feel comfortable to go to a hearing.
So what's the piece that you're trying to bring to us now?
You can do that without policy.
Adopting the ordinance, is that it?
Yes.
Which is what?
Both the map, the policy, and the development regulation.
So we did the map and the policy. So what is what in the development regulations, is it all about new in the overlay? Is it implementing regulations that will help us with existing CUPs that we already have in place? What is it? What are we talking about here?
The proposal is to add enforcement and monitoring provision to the existing development regulation. There is none. And the PC didn't see any before them, so they made a recommendation that staff draft an enforcement and implement a monitoring regulation that we present to the board. And my goal is to do that outside of a work session, come to the board work session, discuss that or present that to you and see if you're comfortable with that monitoring and enforcement before you go to a hearing. It is one of the recommendations of the PC. We don't have any enforcement.
But would the monitoring enforcement apply to the existing CUPs? Legally?
No.
So what?
I mean, no.
I don't sure understand.
Well, sure it would.
If you have a conditional use permit, you're working under a conditional use permit. If you have enforcement provisions of CUPs, wouldn't it apply?
It will apply, but the question is, are there any mechanism in place to say if you're in violation or if you're not living up to the conditions of approval, what's the remedy?
Currently, there are none. Are the recommendations that we will? Are they recommending that we put those kinds of provisions in place?
In place, yes.
And those would affect existing CUPs, which goes to what Commissioner Maduro was speaking to, right?
And any new ones.
Well, there are some ideas that would affect
the rule
only
wouldn't
new
change
ones,
the enforcement
and some ideas
of the rule
that would affect enforcement of existing. That's
meaning
why I'm
because they already have
new
it wouldn't change their conditions.
Here.
You can't change their conditions. It wouldn't do that.
That's what I'm saying.
No. It wouldn't change.
We're just talking about enforcing existing rule.
Exactly for those, and then it would be setting that in that framework in place if any new ones came in, so that they knew that this is how you're going to be judged over time. You know, whether they have to send in a report or whatever.
We're going to talk about enforcement of the rule. What rules are we talking about?
The conditions of the permit.
Conditional use permit.
Which are individual.
Right. Individual, and everyone's different.
Yes.
So how can you talk about enforcing the rule if we don't know what that is?
Well, we know what the conditions are.
That would be in the conditional use
permit. Yeah, the conditions of approval.
But the condition...
Something other than being complaint-driven.
Right, because what it does now is CUPs...
I got that,
Because the CUPs will establish the conditions, right? But it doesn't say... Well, we'll use the Yakult Mountain. It says you must do these reports by this time period. And the thing that we got yelled at for is that for years, long before we were here, and long before anybody was checking, all of a sudden somebody went in to check and say, oh, hey, where are these reports? Because it says in the CUP that you're supposed to get these. Mm-hmm. And we said, yeah, we didn't get those. And they said, well, why not? And we said, well, they didn't send them in. Well, didn't you ask for them? And we said, yeah, well, no. So each individual condition is different, but your enforcement's the same, which is just follow through with what you said you would do, which is basically the bottom line of it.
I thought adopting a mining overlay map didn't have anything to do with policy of enforcement. We had to adopt the policy of the mining overlay map to say we're going to allow here, here, here.
That's correct.
We see the need and of a conditional use permit. Some will be more stringent than others. Gotta be very, very careful we don't drive our miners out of Clark County to run the cost of development up here. So even though they didn't like the idea of a conditional use permit, that we need to be reasonable in what we're talking about.
Yes.
So the reasonable part is that we are going to allow mining in here, 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 and here.
Yes.
And then we go back and look at the adverse conditions that may be caused from each one and address those. So, over here, we talked about enforcement. It could be today. And those are, if you're required to tarp, the sheriff should be up there on a regular basis. If it's polluting of the water, our environmental services should be up there. Code enforcement should be up there on certain things. We should know what those are or recognize what they are and be doing that today.
They are two different things. You're absolutely right. But you know how it worked is that the people who spoke out most loudly about the overlay also have existing issues, right? They have, you know, whether it be Livingston Mountain or Yakult Mountain, those folks have existing issues that are driving them to comment. And so when the Planning Commission gets it, they say, okay, well, yeah, we're dealing with the map and the policies for what comes next. But we also, surface mining...
Just the map.
Well, but you have to have policy to create it, right? You have to have a reason to create the map. Like, how did you choose this area, or how did you not?
Okay.
But so that's the policy I'm talking about. But then they looked at it, and all of a sudden they start getting a bunch of testimony on, well, you already have problems with this, because even if you create this area on the map, there's nothing that when they come in, yeah, it's a conditional use, but you never enforce anything in it. So then all of a sudden the Planning Commission gives us more, which is why they had four hearings on all of it. So it is two separate things. They just kind of went like this and put it together.
There were four hearings in part because at least a couple of those hearings, the hearing room was full and the training room had to be opened, and these were not people who said, oh, I just signed up but I don't want to talk.
Right.
They all wanted to talk, and they all had something to say.
And what they had to say was, we don't like these new areas you're looking at, and oh, by the way, we have problems with some existing
stuff.
That's
right.
In other words, they didn't want mining in Clark County.
Not every one of them had an issue
no matter where you put them.
It's definitely a NIMBY.
Because they had to drive by their house, even though you went way out there with the mine, you still had to drive down this road.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well,
so I'm not real clear what you think we're going to.
We're already done with. We already did good as far as we had a work session on the map and kind of the policies that drove the map.
We haven't adopted the map.
No. That would be it. But so they're saying, so that's ready to go, basically, or close to ready to go to hearing. Right. The other piece of it that the Planning Commission dealt with because of all the people that came in was, when you adopt this map, just per chance, if someone does come in with an application for this, and it's a conditional use permit, and they get their conditions, how are you going to manage that? What are the development regulations and the enforcement mechanisms that you're going to use? I don't think we have to deal with those all at the same time necessarily.
Thank you.
I don't.
That's where I was going. I don't see how we can. I don't want to. We need 4 hours to do it, not one.
That's fair. I mean, because you're going to get everybody from Livingston and Yakult talking about that, and it gets mixed up in the map.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
So, there are two things. There's the policy that defines the criteria that qualifies those areas on the map that are acceptable. That's all by itself, not to be related to anything else. That needs to be done.
Yes.
And needs to be defined. And so you can work with the Planning Commission's input and with Daxel to propose the wording to do that and then bring it to us, right?
We're ready to do that, yes.
Oh, you ready to start that or ready to present that?
No, there's wording.
That's the one we had the work session on already. Yes. Remember, we had the work session on the map, and that was that.
Well, I remember we identified the need for that, but you already presented that wording?
Yeah, we identified.
And that's good, and we're good with that? Or is that
to go to hearing? To go to hearing. Yeah.
Well,
we haven't decided on it, but it's good to go for hearing.
Well, what I mean to say is, hearing is kind of like one of those adoption times or amendment fine tune.
Yes.
So are we that far along that we're pretty solid with that wording? Or should there be some extra work done so that we can present something that's almost ready to adopt, potentially?
No, I think we are ready to come to a hearing on the policy and the map for board consideration, because you have a recommendation on that, and we have made clear that the rationale for the policy and the map are consistent for the board to consider.
Okay. So, and can you make sure that we have the latest and greatest version of that in writing?
Sure.
Because I want to make sure I did my homework on it. Yep, there was two parts to that. That was the first part. And the second part is in understanding that whatever we do here for already permitted quarries does not and cannot legally change their conditions of approval or anything like that.
Right.
But what it really has to do with, all right, what are we going to identify for the methods that we are going to use in order to ensure that we're monitoring and we're enforcing? Right. That's really the question.
Yeah. That's what we're not going to deal with.
Well, at some point we need to.
Absolutely.
Right?
But not here.
Because we don't have those things in place, and we
right.
should.
And everyone's different.
In other words, you're suggesting just to be able to get the bulk of the work done, we reserve that enforcement as a secondary, as a second step. There's some specific words that need to be done in order to finish up that work of the map adoption.
And I agree that Tom's right, that a one-hour hearing becomes a four-hour hearing if we talk about the implementing regulations and enforcement along with the map and the policy, because the map policy piece should be much shorter except for the task force didn't like the original task force thought it was a little tighter than they would like, but other than that, we've got pretty good agreement on
that. Sounds good.
So
we're divide and conquer.
We're going to go out and refine the map that we've all looked at and discussed, and then adopt the policy of why we're implementing the mining overlay.
Right.
Yes. And without belaboring the issue, one other request I would make of the board is there is a matrix in our comp plan that I will package together and have the board delete
good.
That as
we'll
part
have
of
20 minutes left over.
And you have all another right. hearing on the development regulation.
Well, so we don't
we got
so
an understanding.
We're striking.
I don't think we need the work session before the hearing then. We're ready to go to hearing on the policy and map, right? So we go to hearing on that, and then after that hearing,
we do this.
Then I would then at some point come back and do the work session on the regulatory enforcement.
I'm not sure because I've never seen the policy.
Yeah, we did. That was part of the
policy explaining why we need the mining overlay.
Yes.
Well, you're going to refresh us.
I'm going to send that.
Okay.
Send it to us.
Refresh that. Okay.
Because that's part of making the case as
you
to
want
that.
To bring this
or you
to
the
hearing on the 26th.
Is it? No, I haven't. We haven't advertised for that.
Okay.
No data.
I mean, I don't remember that it was already defined.
If I walk out of here, I would then be working with.
I need a
the board office to schedule that. No data.
Yeah, I'd like to be.
So well, we have vacancies still.
This is a.
Well, that'll be quick.
This is a work session request.
Right.
So we are going to have another work session.
The board, sometime in the future, after you're done with the hearing on the map and the policy, I'll come back with a work session.
So we're going to have a hearing before February 26th.
There is no date. I will ask for one, Commissioner.
Okay. For what?
For a hearing on the policy.
The hearing
go forward with that.
Yes.
They come back.
Yes.
And we'll do, then separate them off. Do that other stuff.
Okay.
This is the work session.
Right, and I'm saying my thought is that I agree with you, separating is a good idea in this, is that let's get the hearing on the map out of the way and do that. And then the work session, we can do it whenever. You can do it before, do it after the hearing, whatever. But
it almost has to be done when the application comes in to do the mining.
No, I think you're going to want to. I mean, we're going to want to have it done before
that.
You
can't do it then.
Yeah.
That's when you can't change the development regulations.
We want to do it before then, but.
Yeah.
We're not talking about changing the development regulations. We're talking about conditional use.
But not everything is a conditional use right now, I don't think.
No, it's not.
And so that's the development reg that would need to be changed. That's a major one that would need to be changed.
That's one of
them. The development regulations that we have now are, well, they are vague to an extreme.
Yes.
And the task force and the planning commission, neither group thought that they're adequate.
And that's what he's talking about. Yeah. We said, okay, go put them, you go mine over here. And then we turned around and walked away.
Yeah.
And then they just did willy-nilly and end up with complaints and then follow through with
true.
Okay.
Yes.
But right. So that piece, we should get a work session on at some point. I just don't. I mean, it doesn't. My point was simply, you don't have to do it before the hearing and then bring it all together at one big hearing. Because
right.
I think you're right. Like, separate it out.
So we're just going to bring forward the proposed areas to recognize that could be mined.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the finish for it is that other areas could be applied for at a later date. We just put something forward
we don't,
as required by law.
Well, and what we need to do is adopt policies about how to change that overlay, and that's part of what we would be bringing with the map.
Okay.
Okay. I would request an evening hearing.
Next.
Okay. Sustainable forestry, you know, we had the recent Camp Hope discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And Senator...
Don.
Yeah, Don, Mr. Benton mentioned in the budget work session that he needed to present to you the forestry sustainable forestry plan. And Mr. Stewart, I think you wanted a work session on that, and so that's what this sustainable forestry.
I think, thanks to Don for putting this together. That's awesome.
So okay. This is just more or less a sustainable forest plan of all the land that we own.
Exactly.
And so when we adopted our supplemental budget and we had a proviso in there saying that all things have to come to a hearing.
Right.
This will be the comprehensive
hearing. This will do it. So if we go, basically we're then saying...
Oh, this will be the hearing for those... He's going to bring projects to
He's going to talk to you about the plan for Spud Mountain, for Green Mountain.
Okay. Right. But doing it in an umbrella and saying, hey, look, this is the idea
so
that we have instead of each
come
one...
back individually.
Exactly.
Perfect.
Yeah,
that's
perfect.
Okay, great. You know, there's one that's not on the list. Susan Tissot paid me a visit. You know, she's executive director of the Clark County Historical Museum, mm-hmm. and we provide financial support to her. And in-kind support, she has requested an audience with the board to talk about her programs, updates, and news. I don't think she'd need any more than a half hour. I think traditionally you have granted her an audience. I don't know whether you want to do that again.
Another one.
Yeah, it's not on there.
No, it's not. You don't have a paper on that.
Because
she's not county staff. I didn't expect her to do a 10-step. So I'm asking on her behalf.
For a half hour for the update.
Okay.
I just had a great tour of that whole facility for about an hour last week. It was really, really good. So I'm up to speed.
We need 15 minutes then.
Yeah, she's done great work. I have to go over there and look at the remodel. Apparently, she got a number of local businesses in the IEBW, the local electrical workers union, to come in and do work for free. And
volunteers everything. Well, yeah,
those unions do something.
Oh, I'm
sorry to get.
So okay, so
actually, they did, and they do not only do that, but they do lots of good volunteer stuff. They really do.
Okay, now we had four vacancies.
Give you a 40-hour work week.
Department of Environmental Services.
That's a clean water. That's a clean water legal and compliance that you already.
This one.
You already do it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we talked about settlement and the fee structure and the fact that we needed to come to the board.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what that is. The fourth item.
And no, I got this and I got this.
Yeah, that's the clean water legal and compliance. That's to talk about
the money.
The money. You know, the cost of their program.
Oh, that was for the money.
It was the sooner than later one.
Okay.
Yeah, it's got it in.
Okay, now last week I handed out four vacancy requests. One.
Question. By the end of March, it's going to be too late, and you're having a work session to decide what the fee is going
to
be.
He's going to try to push it forward. That was our discussion. Try to get it as soon as possible.
Like a month.
Yeah.
If I can do it next week, we'll do it next week. If I can do it in 2 weeks, we'll do it in 2 weeks.
Before the end of February.
Yeah, like I said, the minute we're done here, we will figure out where to put that.
I'll cross off March here. Okay. Mm-hmm. I got to keep you honest.
That's fair.
Okay, so the vacancy request from last time, Norm Willinger was a Departmental Information Systems Coordinator for Public Works. They rely heavily on on technology, and when I worked in Public Works, I Norm Willinger was invaluable, and I think we need to replace him.
And that's from the road plan, right?
Okay.
You guys good?
DCS has a person named Ryan Treglown that left. Oh, no, he was promoted, and he was a grant accounting specialist. they rely heavily on grants, and the accounting requirements are remarkably detailed.
I'm all for a grant.
And so if we don't have these people, we don't get money.
Are you guys good with that? I am.
Okay, and there's no general fund there. Okay, now the two that will probably generate some discussion.
How about general services? I got another one.
No, that's a brand new one.
Oh, for next week.
Oh, okay.
That's for next
week.
That's
next week. Okay.
Yeah. Then, but I can make a sales pitch for replacing him right now.
So that's the only one for next week?
Yeah, we only have one for next week. All right, so Francine Rice, our HR director, has asked for two positions, one a full FTE and another at 0.55. She's down 2.6 positions, and her folks are on a very, very fast-moving treadmill. We've got a new requirement coming in for management of the self-insured medical. And so she asked for two positions, and she came in and did one-on-ones with each of you. And so I think I know what your positions are, but any discussion?
I had your discussion and then went back and did some more research. And so I have some concern with the number of the FTEs that they have in the department. Then I had kind of a discussion with you also as to the ratio as to where we are. I don't have all my information I think I need. And so I'm reluctant. I'm having a problem with the second half. And so can I have another week?
It's up to you, man. I mean, I know that for myself, you know, we're implementing our self-insurance, and the self-insurance is going to save us, what, 1.2? Yeah.
And that's the problem I'm not
something
having
like
a
that.
Problem with.
I yeah, we've got to get someone in there to manage that because, you know, the only way we're going to save significant revenue is if we manage it appropriately. If we don't manage the fund like any other insurance company, if you don't manage it correctly, it's going to go south on you quick. And then, but as far as the other pieces of it go, if you need more information, I know that they've been, I mean, you know, they've been tight as a tick where when we went through cuts, they all took cuts in FTE. They went down to like 0.6 or 0.7 or something like that. I forget what. I know they ended up taking cuts during our lower times so that we could actually save service, and it's an internal service. So when, let's see, FTE change history.
This is FTEs. And by department.
Right.
Here's the department.
Gotcha.
Okay. Now that's counting the peak staffing.
Right. Right. You know, human resources. Right. And then, so it went, but it doesn't show the overtime. So it went like this, well, and then came back up.
Well, actually, this is the 10-year span from 2003-04, 2013-14, that from one point to the other point, this is showing what each of the departments did. And there's, you see the when all these departments were cutting,
but there's been a steady increase in requirements. I mean, the FMLA program is brand new, and
so I think we agree in the one for supporting the self-insured program. Do we all agree in that one?
Well, certainly the stewardship of that needs to be done, but within her staff, they've been able to up to this point. Work with an outside administrator to make that work, and that work, of course, needs to be happening. But she has staff there.
That was just to set up the program. That wasn't actually operate and run the program. The outside was just to say, can we do it, and to get it set up. Then you actually have to manage it
and to do actuarial work.
And the question is, the staff that she has already. If we didn't add new people, then you would naturally give this to one of the existing, or one or two of the existing
people. If they had bandwidth.
And that's where this, the requirements for each of these other areas also increased over time. So that's pretty much the case over time. Yet here we've got, you see the difference, the contrast here between HR, which is number 7 here, and all the other all these other departments. These guys added a little bit. But this is really standing out.
Can I see that? Because I know that there was also...
It peaked in 2009-10. And then it went back down.
Well, and there were also two positions that were outside that were not included.
Health district.
Yeah, there were two. There was
community
health district
development.
And community development that are now wrapped into HR.
And that was
that were already... That are not additions to HR functions,
or HR, excuse me, HR FTEs within the county at large, but they are additions that you see here. So instead of four and a half overtime, it's actually 2.5 overtime, because the other two already existed. They existed at the beginning of this.
Which means then when we already had a core here that was able to handle all the staff here. Staff grew a little bit, but we also had hundreds of people leave here.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we still had those extra two people brought in. So I'm just saying we need a little more input here to understand better before we add new staff, because already we added staff that's way outside of the ordinary of all the other departments.
But again, you got to block this down to 2.5, not 4.5,
still,
and then look at it.
If that was the case, you're still above everybody else.
And we've added programs, administration of the Family Leave Medical, the Family Medical Leave Act,
which is two of the other departments as well. They've added.
No, HR, it's centrally administered.
Under FMLA.
And
equal
plus the diversity, cultural assessments, and the diversity.
Well, so maybe that would be. So how about that?
Can we bring it next week?
Yeah, and the information. What is the increase? Because I mean, you make a good case as far as saying, well, why would they be increased where others have not? And can we not? I mean, can we just give me some bullets as to, like, what is it between 03, 04, or whatever, and now, what are the increasing responsibilities that would have made that necessary, and moving forward, why that level is necessary?
Okay,
because this is just vacancies.
Sure.
This isn't saying, should we add some people? This is saying they're 2.6 down,
right,
and they're trying to replace to 1.6, yeah. So the 2.5 would go to 1.5
we've seen it.
We do what they ask, right?
Well, I can just reproduce this.
Wait. So let me get clarity, though, first. Yes. So we're in agreement that it's not 4.5, it's actually 2.5, right? Because there were two other positions, public health and community development, that existed, but in other departments that were added to the department, but not to the overall number of FTEs in the organization.
We took those full-time people and added it to the staff that was already managing more people then, and we shrunk since then.
My only other point, because if we can be on the same page with the 2.5, because it's not 4.5, it's 2.5. It is, factually. It's 2.5. So what HR is asking to do is go from 2.6 vacancies to 1.6 vacancies. So if we granted them what they are asking, that would take them down another FTE. So they would then be at 1.5. And 1.5 is within the range of what
actually,
others have seen. I mean, it'd be top end of the range still.
Well, no, you would still be above.
Okay. So, and then comes the information of, okay, why, even if it's 1.5 more, why? Why would it need to be 1.5 more than, and why would it be more than these other?
And that's a really good question. And so the answer is not no today. The answer is, let's do more homework. I want to make sure that we all want to make sure that we're good stewards, mm-hmm. and that we understand and that we're filling appropriate needs, and we're
right.
And that is something that is an unfinished business right now.
And I that makes perfect sense. And I do want to make sure we get it right, because HR is the organizational function that keeps us from unfair labor practices, which cost significant time and money for this organization.
Yep.
It saves us from, extended contract negotiations that end up costing us more, or, costing us more because we don't have adequate representation. It ends up, if we get FMLA problems going in, there's another lawsuit that comes up. I mean, they protect us. And so I definitely want to make sure we get it right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I might add that I did a little research on the internet looking for industry metrics. Mm-hmm. And 561 organizations were interviewed, and the most common staffing level was one HR person for every 75 to 100 employees. If you take our 1650 and work the ratio at 75, that's 22 people in our HR shop. If you work it with 100, that's 16. Francine's at about 16. So I think she's right-sized based on industry metrics. And
that's one good piece of information.
Those metrics include the private sector, which doesn't have nearly the stringent requirements that we do that are based in RCWs at the state.
So more information coming. I got more information coming from OSAC as well.
Okay.
So this chart shows when they cut it back on the first...
5, 6.
That's just a snapshot.
We added back.
This is not versus time.
No. Exactly. Oh. This is just overall. Between this point and this point, they're up this amount.
Right.
And my point is it's actually 2.5 instead of the 4.5 because they actually wrap 2 from other departments. So, like, for example, is community development
There's
on there?
Copy, yeah.
I can't tell. Yeah, community planning's on there. I don't see community development, but that's an enterprise fund, so it's not the same idea.
These are the top commissioners.
And public health is, are they in here? They're not either. So between those two departments, they lost an FTE, so it looks like they lost one, but they didn't. They just gave them to them. But it's still 2.5 up. You know, and so the question is, all right, well, why? What's happened over time? That's the information we'll get from you guys, and sounds like WASAC's going to give us a little bit.
I'm under animal control. We last year added some people back to animal control. They got cut way back, and then we brought them back up, and I don't think this shows that.
Well, this is the numbers we got from Mark Gassaway.
Does it include the supplemental? Like,
it says 13-14, so I assume it's up to date.
Okay. So the main thing is that there's not a problem, Mark, if we bring this back next week.
It's the board's call. I'd be happy to come back next week and provide as much information as the board needs.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay. You do have one. This is a maintenance helper for facilities.
this is the new one?
Yeah. Yeah. These are the people that set up our hearing rooms, move the furniture around.
Is this replacing a person?
Yes. Yeah. Leif Leifson, he came from the Camas paper plant. He's been a great member of our staff. And he's going to get in a motorhome and start touring the country here in about 30 days. Pardon me?
Good for him.
But these guys help clean up biohazard spills,
do everything.
Various materials that are deposited in various places by various people.
And I'm already good at this one.
All right.
Speaking of biohazards and people depositing stuff. have you looked into what we can do to help the lady that's out, but
I have a note on my monitor.
You mean public comment?
I don't think all those cards go
No, well,
the guy out who showed us pictures.
That axle's on that one. No, out in front of the building, the carts all line up. Yeah. It's all one person.
Oh, right? I didn't know that.
I had no idea. I thought, I was like, God, it's a parking lot. Do we have 3 or 4 people? And a couple of the guys who work here. I was coming up the elevator with them. They're like, "Nah, it's all the woman who does the knitting." They're like, "It's all hers. She'll bring them in like in a caravan. She brings in these 3 or 4 carts." And I'm like, "She needs help. She obviously needs help. This is not normal activity. So I mean, she needs help." So
I'll give you a report tomorrow.
So I have a suggestion. We have some empty parking spots downstairs, down over toward the generator. Is there any open parking spots right next to the generator where that bicycle lockup area is?
For her to park her carts?
She probably wants to keep an eye on it.
That's the issue.
Yeah. Those are her personal belongings.
No, they're there when she's not. That's what I was talking to the receptionist there.
They're probably keeping an eye on them for her.
Yeah. I can't put myself in her place, but she sits on the little bench that's near
she takes turns both sides.
And so she'll sit there and knit and sit there, and she's not bothering anybody. But I agree that she probably thinks, okay, well, somebody's sitting right there looking out during the day to protect her cars, because I mean that's all her stuff.
I've probably seen them add. So I think there's 5 now.
There's a lot. I know. There's a lot. The only one that's not hers is you'll see a guy walking around with a dolly. That's full up to here with stuff. The dolly, and he's got his dolly, and that's it.
It's not appropriate out there.
It's just
one cart brings another, and if you don't do something soon, you're gonna have. We'll be moving the cars out and bringing in.
and I'm not one to say to be mean about
it. What should you do with them before?
I don't know. I don't know.
So you're working with Cheryl House and with the different ministries to make sure she has the right kind of connections.
That'd be great.
Yeah, we'll
appreciate that.
Try to get her some help, and I'll report out.
That'd be wonderful.
Okay.
That's surprised. I didn't really help.
I didn't either. I had no idea.
Did So she was there, sitting there on the bench, and I've talked to her several times. Mm-hmm. And so I was talking to the receptionist, saying, who do those belong to? In fact, she wasn't there at first, and then she came in. And I don't think the receptionist realized they all belonged to one person either.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine they would.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, Mark.
Sure. We done?
That's it. We're done.
Cool. Woof. All right.